You're listening to the Star Shanty Singers, who performed at the opening of a new exhibition at the House of Mananan in Peel, which explores the Isle of Man's remarkable maritime heritage and honours the 200th anniversary of the RNLI. In a slightly shaky recording, this is what Dave Martin, M&H Vice Chair, and opener Sir John Lorimer had to say at the opening of the exhibition.
Though most of the heritage is on the island, M&H also has a remit to look after that, which is around the island, under the surrounding sea, in our 12-mile territorial waters limit. On the 4th of March, the RNLI will be celebrating its 200th anniversary. This internationally respected and supported organisation had its foundations on the Isle of Man through Manx resident Sir William Hillary. Hillary had heard about, taken part in, and witnessed the consequences of many shipwrecks in Manx waters and resolved to make a difference. This exhibition is themed around Hillary's key tenets of both rescuing and looking after the rescuers, and then sets those in the wider context of our island and its links with the sea. It was only after the last ice age, when the land bridge to the east of us was inundated, that we actually became an island rather than just West Cumbria. So we've been an island for maybe 100 centuries, and for the first 99 of those centuries, the sea was the only way to get across the Isle of Man adjacent islands. Although we've now got air links, we're still dependent on our ferry links for most of our goods traffic on and off the island. But sadly, for the majority of Manx residents, they probably only think of the sea when they can't get their favourite condiment in the supermarket. And we hope that this exhibition will help reconnect some of them with the sea. The sea is an enabler. It allowed Viking ships or Amazon deliveries to reach us here, and it gives, whether it's for fishermen or modern recreation, but it can also cruelly take away. There are around 2,000 recorded shipwrecks in Manx waters, from those earliest recorded in AD 1228 to that of Lassie 2 weeks ago, whose crew was saved by Douglas lifeboat. As you go around the exhibition, you will see little QR codes, and these, when scanned, will open up the relevant records in M&H's Historic Environment Record, HEL, providing information on the ship or wreck or associated event, making a whole side of our heritage that's out of sight beneath the water accessible to all. These codes are just a handful from the several thousand detailed records which have recently been added to M&H's HER, thanks to the recent donation by Adrian Corker of Lifetimes Research. As I said, M&H has responsibility for both cultural and natural heritage. And there's a natural history exhibit in here which may at first appear anachronistic, a cage of hedgehogs. They're believed to be descendants of shipwreck survivors. In 1800, the Hooton was wrecked on Rue Point in Andrus, and my credit to the whatever grandfather and his men rescued the crew and passengers and succoured the passengers, the humans, at Knockadinny. One of the passengers had a crate of hedgehogs for baking, and in gratitude gave them to my ancestor. I don't quite know what went through his mind. Was it, what do I want to do with these, or who are things? But anyway, they were turned loose. And that's apparently how we came to have hedgehogs on the Isle of Man. Luckily for him, there wasn't a deafer inspector at the time pulling up for increasing an alien species. In closing, I must place on record our thanks to Alison Fox and our technical conservation and design staff who have curated this excellent exhibition. I'd also like to express our thanks not only to friends in the RNLI and elsewhere who have lent items or provided images for display for this specific exhibition, but also those who have previously donated items to the National Collection, which we can now display here. And also, crucially, those who donate information on artifacts or shipwrecks, without which all we might have are boxes of unattributed rivets or metalwork. And finally, we should always remember that rescues are carried out by people, equipment and organisation, and you'll see how they've developed, can help increasing the chances of successful rescue and reducing but never eliminating the risk to those caring individuals who put their own lives on the line to rescue others. And this exhibition tells a few of the stories behind some of our maritime history whose echoes ripple far beyond our island.
Thank you, David. Ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Mike, good afternoon. And I'm delighted to be here to formally open the All at Sea exhibition here at the House of Mananan. Now, I'm well aware that I am standing in between, for some of you, in between here and the exhibition. For others, I'm standing in the way of the funerary excellent. And clearly, for David, I'm standing in the way of him and his hedgehog sandwich. But I thought I'd say a few words about the exhibition. Lady Lorimer and I have just had a sneak preview of the exhibition. What struck me was the amazing stories behind the pictures and exhibits, all of which highlight and emphasise the very special role of the Isle of Man in the story of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, right from its very inception as a brainchild of Sir William Hillary. Indeed, I would say that the island continues to play a very important and perhaps unique role some 200 years after the founding of the Isle of Man, with our five lifeboat stations, with all-weather and inshore boats. I don't think it is appropriate at this stage in the proceedings for us to all recognise our Manx RNLI volunteers, who show such extraordinary commitment to and service in the RNLI. Be they onshore staff, supporters, or crew. So let's give them all a round of applause. So, back in September 1787, 36 men and 50 boats in the Manx herring fleet were lost at sea to the east of the island. This was just one incident of many that has occurred in Manx waters over the years. This amazing exhibition presents stories of some of those shipwrecks and how they motivated Manx resident Sir William Hillary to establish a maritime life-saving institution. 200 years ago, Sir William's mission was to ensure the preservation of life from the perils of the sea, to assist vessels in distress, to preserve vessels and property, to prevent plunder, to support those rescued, and to provide suitable rewards for rescuers. His was a vision to save all at sea. Sir William was an eyewitness to the hardships during and after sea rescues. Indeed, he himself helped save an estimated 500 lives around the Manx coast. These incidents directly influenced his vision for what would become one of the most respected organisations in the world. So, in 1823, he submitted his idea in the form of a petition to the British government, and on the 4th of March 1824, the National Institution for the Preservation of Lives and Property from Shipwreck was founded. In 1854, its name was changed to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, the RNLI. Sir William was clearly a man with a vision. He also possessed perseverance, determination, drive and courage in spades. He is credited with the RNLI motto, "With courage, nothing is impossible," which I think remains so fitting to this day. In the exhibition, you will see a gold medal inscribed with "Let not the deep swallow me up." This was one of Sir William's own medals for founding the RNLI, kindly loaned by the RNLI Heritage Collection Trust. At one stage, six lifeboat stations operated on the Isle of Man. The Castletown station closed in 1926, but the remaining five are still at the heart of our local communities and at the forefront of maritime safety. Since the stations opened, over 1,700 lives have been saved. I would also like to acknowledge the incredible work of the Manx National Heritage team, who have put so much time and effort into the All at Sea exhibition. Alison Fox, as you have heard, deserves special mention. The many months in curating the display alongside the RLI, and also Adrian Corkill for his research on close to 2,000 shipwrecks in the seas surrounding the Isle of Man. And this forms the basis of the information in the exhibition. Adrian has donated his research to the Manx National Collections, and as you have heard from David, is now accessible by all via the Isle of Man Heritage Environment Record. But finally, in terms of thank you to all the sponsors, the donors, the researchers, the technicians, and all the other people who've been involved, many of them Manx National Heritage and RLI supporters. This undoubtedly has been a real team effort, and I think we ought to give them all a round of applause too. So to give you a flavour of what you're about to see, I'd like to focus on one ship included in the exhibition. And I think it perhaps highlights best the link between the island, the waters and the RLI. So the St George shipwreck, Peel, 7th of October 1889. The full fury of a northwesterly gale did not deter the Peel lifeboat volunteers. The St. George was in distress, her crew signalling for help. Thousands gathered on shore to watch as coxswain Charlie Kane and the lifeboat crew left the safety of the harbour. For over 3 hours they rowed, the boat twice swamped by waves. Eventually a line was secured between the two vessels, with the lifeboat surrounded by wreckage and just 20 yards away from the out-of-control, much larger St. George. The rescue of the 23 souls on board began, each having to climb into a lifebuoy, jump overboard, and be hauled into the lifeboat. All that is, apart from Sigrid Torreson, the nine-month-old captain's daughter, who was carried in a canvas bag on the back of the ship's carpenter. On return to harbour, the Isle of Man Times reported that someone shouted, "Are all saved? Yes!" A ringing cheer went up from the assembled thousands, the like of which has never been heard in Peel before. Undoubtedly, with courage, nothing is impossible. You can see the St. George figurehead here and the medal awarded to Charlie Kane. Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, I think it's really important for all of us to remember that the waters around the island are as perilous as they are beautiful. And we should recognise that only on the 7th of February, this month, the June Rose, a fishing vessel, sunk off Laxey, despite the best efforts of the Douglas lifeboat. We should also reflect on how fortunate we are to have on our island committed and dedicated RLI volunteers on standby 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, ready to go to sea to help crews and ships in distress in all conditions. With courage, nothing is impossible. Ladies and gentlemen, I am delighted to declare the All at Sea exhibition officially open.
I caught up with Martin Perkins at the opening.
Yeah, I've got three hats on, Phil. I'm chair of the Douglas branch of the RLI, station number one. I'm also a trustee of the Manx National Heritage. And also, I'm involved in the Star Shanty Singers. So, yeah, three hats today. Busy day.
Some cracking singing there too. In relation then to your, particularly to your RNLI role, how important is this sort of commemoration?
It's a one-off, Phil, and I think we are so privileged that it was started on the island. Sir William Hillary, he had this vision, and it started here as a result of the HMS Racehorse going down in Castletown and Manx families being without their male head of the household. And then, of course, he put that forward in London at the London Tavern, and that we should have a national organisation throughout the UK that is responsible for saving lives at sea. And that is still our charter today. Whatever happens, we save lives at sea. That's what we do.
And, of course, the RNLI relies heavily on volunteers, doesn't it?
Yeah, the vast majority of the people are volunteers. We have volunteers from all walks of life. We have, on Douglas, we've got six ladies now that have volunteered in the crew. We do have certain people that are paid, the mechanics are paid, but on the whole, we're a non-government organisation, which is a good place to be. We're not under any influence of any government quangos or anything like that. We do completely what we need to do to save lives at sea.
And all the money that you raise goes directly into continuation of the service.
Yeah, the money that's raised goes all to the rescuing equipment that the lads need and lasses need when they're out there, and we make sure they have the very latest equipment to carry out a very dangerous job. And only last week, Douglas Lifeboat was involved in rescuing two fishermen whose boat was sinking. Unfortunately, we couldn't save the boat, but we managed to make sure the lads got off. And in fact, they were actually taken by a friend of theirs who happened to have another fishing boat near them. So we got them on that boat, and we're there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
M&H experts Alison Fox and Chris Weeks played a big part in preparing the exhibition. I spoke to them as the exhibition was being prepared.
I've been part of a team that have put together this exhibition that celebrates the 200th anniversary of the RNLI, but also talks about why Sir William Hillary felt that one was needed, really. So we've all worked together to pull out some stories from research that's been done by Adrian Corkle over the past 30 years. So some of the stories of the shipwrecks around the Isle of Man, there's 2,000 recorded shipwrecks in Manx waters. And what we've tried to do is pick out perhaps some of the less well-known ones, but also some of the more well-known ones, just to tell people more about the story and just to highlight the fact that people can read all about all the stories of these shipwrecks now through Manx National Heritage's Isle of Man Heritage Environment Record that has all Adrian's research freely available for people to get over the internet. And also, we've been very fortunate that we've worked together with the RNLI, both locally and at their headquarters in Dorset, to get some really fantastic objects on loan for this exhibition.
And for those who don't really know that much about this, why should the Isle of Man be celebrating this specifically?
Sir William Hillary was a Manx resident in the early 1800s, 1820s. He was very much concerned about maritime safety. He took part in rescues himself. We have records of him jumping into the lifeboats, essentially, before the RNLI was actually formed, to go out and help people, specifically off Douglas, really, that had come into difficulty in their ships. He was resident on the Isle of Man, and one of the really powerful quotes we have in the exhibition was Sir William Hillary wrote that the establishment of a national institution for the preservation of human life from the perils of the sea has only suggested itself to me since my residence on a part of the coast often exposed to the most distressing scenes of misery. He wrote that in February 1823 in Douglas, so I think that puts the Isle of Man firmly at the heart of the beginnings of the RNLI.
And you mentioned the 2,000 recorded wrecks. That's obviously very much a part of this. And, you know, bear in mind, in our lifetimes, wrecks on the coast of the Isle of Man are not a familiar thing. A lot of these wrecks were happening at the time that Sir William Hillary would have been in Douglas in the Isle of Man.
That's it. And I think we are very fortunate to have a lot of records in the Manx National Archives that tell about these stories from the newspapers from the 1800s, but also things like the shipping records, court records, all of these sources Adrian's gone to and has pulled these stories of the shipwrecks out and done a lot of detective work of piecing all these things together. So we have this amazing resource of things that were happening to people just around the Isle of Man. And I think nowadays we perhaps look to the air almost more than we look to the sea for getting places quickly and getting things in to the island. But certainly, up until the 1900s, the boats were the only way. That was the only way anything or anybody could get to and from the Isle of Man. And the stories we have here are not only about the people who were affected coming to or from the Isle of Man, but also people who were just going by. And there's a phrase we often use, and the Isle of Man just got in the way. We have these, the ships that were involved in the transatlantic trade in humans, the slave trade. We have records of some of those ships being lost on their outward journey around the Isle of Man. We have records of ships on their way from Buenos Aires to somewhere in Europe, and they got wrecked at Ramsey. All these, these amazing stories, these amazing journeys. And that was one of the points that Sir William Hillary was very keen to stress, was that the assistance should be given without thought to where you were from, where you were going. If you were in trouble at sea and you needed help, then that's what should happen. So what we've tried to do with the exhibition a little bit is divide it into themes. So Hillary set down six pillars, really, that the RNLI should be based upon. And these include things like preservation of life, of course, that's the top one, but also prevention of plunder. And we've got some great stories from that. We've got the story of the Thorn, which was shipwrecked off Onkenhead, which a lot of people will be familiar with, perhaps, but that was wrecked with its cargo of booze, essentially. And there's some fantastic accounts in the newspapers of everybody flocking to this wreck site, and the customs officers like kicking over the barrels, and people were scooping up the alcohol with their boots and drinking out of their boots, and just amazing scenes of like drunken people parading from Onkenhead down along Douglas Promenade. And we've also got a little bit about the Clan McMaster, which was lost in the Sound, and it's said that most of the homes in the south of the Isle of Man mysteriously acquired sewing machines after that wreck. So we've got some great stories about that, but also we've got some very poignant stories as well. As I say, that the main thing is about preservation of life, and we have kindly loaned to us by Peel RNLI station the figurehead of St. George, which is now, he usually lives now inside the lifeboat station. But a lot of people on the island will remember when he was outside, and loads of people have, had old black and white photos of them taken with St. George in the background. But the story of the St. George rescue, is incredible. It's, that such rough seas, there was no hesitation about the local people going in and saving. This massive cheer went up when everybody on board was saved, including a baby who was passed over in a carpenter's bag to the rescue boat. And we have medals on display from the coxswain of the lifeboat, but also from, kindly loaned to us by Alan Corlett, one of the crew, James Hughes, as well, from that rescue. There are other stories in here. A lot of people know about the Lily, often called the Brig Lily, who unfortunately came to grief in the Sound, and there was this massive explosion, and an awful lot of people died in that. And it's really to sort of bring home the fact that people were dying, and families were being left destitute. We've also got artifacts from HMS Racehorse, which seems to have been the final straw for William Hillary. He saw the loss of life from the people from Castletown who went to rescue the naval crew who were on HMS Racehorse. Some of those rescue crew lost their lives, and they left widows and children. And it was up to the local people to put a fund together to try and help those families financially. So, you know, we hope that people will come to the exhibition, enjoy the stories, but also perhaps go away with a sense of it wasn't always easy to get from A to B on the sea, and not everybody did. But the title, not everybody successfully made their journeys, but the title of the exhibition, All at Sea, is trying to encompass the fact that it is about everybody. As I say, we've got ships coming from literally all over the world who've come a cropper, you know, in Manx waters. There's representatives from over 30 countries that have got wreck sites in Manx waters. And it's just, it's an absolutely fascinating part of history. But it's also part of history that the actual archaeological sites, if you like, of the shipwrecks are inaccessible to most of us. You know, I don't dive. Most people don't dive. So it's really important, I think, for us to bring those stories up, even if people can't see the shipwrecks themselves, just so that they know they are all there, and they know a little bit about how they ended up there, and where we can, a little bit about the people who were on those boats. We have some fantastic artefacts that are associated with Sir William Hillary himself. We're very fortunate that the RNLI Heritage Collections Trust have loaned us the gold medal that was awarded to Sir William Hillary for founding the RNLI, which is just a fantastic object to have. You know, we sort of talk about this this amazing institution that came out of tragedy, really. This person who was so determined to carry this forward, and so to have something that belonged to him, and just to try and imagine, you know, how he felt when he was awarded this medal. You know, it's a really fantastic object. We've also got a lovely sort of miniature silhouette of him as well. The portrait that most people are probably familiar with is when he's looking more mature, shall we say. But this miniature silhouette is great. You can sort of see his sort of young eyelashes and things like that. So thanks to the RNLI for loaning us those. And then we've also got two early editions of the pamphlet that William Hillary put together to persuade people that we needed a national institution and the reasons why. So these are two really important archives that are in the Manx National Archive collection, and you'll see that the very first edition that we've got on display here has got written across the top from the author. So, you know, it's a great collection of objects there.
And for young people who are listening, pamphlets were the equivalent of social media.
They were, yeah. Getting the message out there was a little bit slower. A little bit more painstaking, which is, you know, one of the fascinating things about Sir William Hillary as well is that, you know, the pamphlet is, you know, it's not a huge thick tome, but it's so thoughtfully written, so very well considered, because he knew he had to convince the UK government to support this idea. Eventually, when it came down to it, the institution was not government funded, but to get the support from very wealthy patrons, he had to get his message across, and, you know, he had to do this very, very thoroughly. And so writing, producing and printing at his own cost, this pamphlet was the only way to do that, really.
And behind us here, we've got behind us the artefacts from the wreck of the HMS Racehorse. I mean, we did a programme on that. Was it last year, the commemoration of that? I think it was. What can we see here?
Yes, these are from the wreck of HMS Racehorse. So these have all been kindly donated by the Isle of Man Sub Aqua Club, who actually own the shipwreck. The HMS Racehorse is the only legally protected wreck in Manx waters. And it was really the, as I say, the it was the final straw, really, for William Hillary. So the artefacts that we've got on display here include things like cannonballs, muskets, the kind of things you'd expect to find on a British Navy ship, and a racehorse sank just off Langness. Interestingly, we've got an elephant's tusk as well, which was recovered from the shipwreck. There was actually two that were recovered. We've just got one on display here, which was presumably a souvenir from one of the sailors on board, one of their travels. And then we've just got parts of the ship itself, this copper sheeting that would have gone around the hull of the ship to protect it from the shipworms boring into the wood and compromising the stability. And there's just a little block that shows the damage that these shipworms can do as well, which is really quite extensive for such little things. So it's just it's a slightly random collection of objects, but it's all these sort of things that would have been on board essentially these sailors' homes, you know, while they were sailing to and from the Isle of Man, but also around Europe.
And just as a brief summary, the racehorse, there were significant loss of life on that, and it was round about the same time that William Hillary was thinking about the whole idea of establishing some preservation service for lives at sea.
Yes, the HMS Racehorse was lost in December 1822, and we know that the first edition of his pamphlet was, he was writing that winter. It was published February 1823. So, you know, significant loss of local lives as well as the crew from the ship, I think really spurred Hillary on. He'd taken part in rescues himself. He'd seen the dangers. Often when you're closest to the coast, that's the most dangerous part of the journey. You know, these ships, you know, they don't have brakes. You know, that there's no engines to help you. If you're driven towards the coast, then, you know, you're in real trouble. So he'd seen this time and time again. And we think that the loss of this particular ship and the effect it had on the local people from Castletown, who, you know, put their safety to one side and piled out to try and save these men, really set them off on this path that's, right, we really need to do something.
And no cameras in those days, but obviously some keen artists looking for subjects for their paintings, and we see some magnificent examples of that in this exhibition.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have some modern representations, actually, of some of the more famous shipwrecks. The Isle of Man Post Office commissioned us a special series of stamps in 2022 to go alongside the anniversary of the sinking of the Racehorse, and they've very kindly given us permission to reproduce the paintings that Paul Parker did in conjunction with Adrian Corkill of the Lily, which, you know, it's really powerful, showing it exploding. We have a couple of muskets that came off the Lily, and we talk about that story. But we also have a really fantastic oil painting as well that shows Sir William Hillary going out to the rescue of the St. George, a different St. George from the Peel St. George, this one off Douglas, in Douglas Bay. And this oil painting, it's very, very intricate, but you can see this tiny rescue boat in these massive waves going out to get this big ship. So William Hillary was on that, and that was in 1830, and it was the it was that wreck, along with others that had been lost in Douglas Bay, that again prompted him to drive forward this idea of having some kind of safe space in Douglas Bay where stricken ships could aim for, or crews off stricken ships could aim for, when there wasn't the Douglas Harbour that we know now, and that eventually became the Tower Refuge, which we're so familiar with.
I am Phil, the Collections Care and Conservation Manager at Manx National Heritage.
And you've had quite a lot to do with this exhibition.
Yes, there's been quite a lot of work involved in this exhibit. I mean, a lot of the artefacts that we're showing are wreck artefacts, and they're not in a good condition, as you would not be if you'd been lying under the sea for 100 years or more. And they needed stabilisation, but more than that, there are all sorts of unusual, interesting things, medals, documents, costumes, but a lot of work has gone into it. Yes, it has.
And I see here a small representation of the Solway Harvester.
Yeah, the Solway Harvester model is a really extraordinary object. This was a model that was built at considerable expense. I think I'm right in saying it cost £20,000 to make this model. It doesn't look like much, but it is extremely accurate. It was built to represent the trawler Solway Harvester during the inquest to her sinking, and it was designed with all sorts of sensors and motors on board. That's one of the reasons it was so expensive to create, because it was used in a wave tank to demonstrate how it might have been possible that Solway Harvester was lost, and it was critical in the forensic examination of that horrible incident. So it's a bit of a baleful object, and I haven't really wanted to work on it, but actually it's a piece of police evidence, and it came to us from the Isle of Man Constabulary. And it was not in a great condition when we got it, because it had been heavily used in the inquest. So it's covered in engine oil and all sorts of things. And the paint, funnily enough, the paint is peeling off it. So rather like an oil painting in the art collection, it needed quite a lot of attention to try and relay that paint and stabilise the object for display. And we never really thought that it would be displayed, because it's A, not a thing of beauty, and B, represents an incident which is greatly traumatic to the island and to everybody involved. But it's an amazing thing, I think.
And the RNLI presumably were involved in that whole incident?
Absolutely, so far as I understand the incident, because Solway Harvester went down in Manx waters, it was a major thing for us.
You've also got a colleague here who's been helping with the exhibition.
True, yes. My colleague Emma Cornu, who is our paper and archives conservator, has been doing quite a bit of work. We team up when there are complicated multimedia objects to deal with, and Emma and Nicola Toombs as well, who isn't here today, doing a lot of work on costumes, haven't you, Emma?
Yes, we have. So there's two oilskin jackets that are going in the display, which Nicola did most of the work on cleaning and then mounting them on mannequins so that they can be displayed safely. And so they were really difficult to handle, especially the older oilskin, because it's become extremely stiff with age, and so it's really difficult to move. And then the other oilskin is from the 1960s, mm-hmm. I think, and that's from a coxswain from Douglas. I think Rob Curran was his name, quite a character from what I've heard. So we've got his oilskin, and it's really different from the kind of thing that the RNLI have today. So it's hard to imagine wearing that, and then also performing rescues on a lifeboat. Mm-hmm. But Nicola managed to clean it up really well, and it's going to be on display here. So it's quite a striking object, actually, because it's kind of quite big and bright, as it should be. And so we've done quite a lot of work on those, and also Chris very skillfully made some replica buttons from the ones that were missing. And so we're kind of finishing off installing them today.
And the elder of the two examples, what sort of period is that?
We think that's about 1920s. Okay. So it's extremely old, really, and for the kind of material that it is, it hasn't really aged well at all.
In fact, that particular jacket was in the old farmhouse in the Lower Folk Galleries at the Manx Museum. You would never have noticed it, because it looked like a dead bat hanging from a doorway. It was all scrunched up like an old cornflake, and it took us an awful long time, didn't it, Emma, with the steamer to try and coax it out of its hideously deformed condition.
Yeah, so if you, don't touch it, but if you were to touch it, it's just completely stiff. So that's the degradation of the oils, I guess, in the that was applied to the, it's cotton canvas oiled. So just as a really extreme example of how oiled things degrade. So it's, you know, it's kind of stuck in that position. So yeah, it was an extremely difficult object to handle and mount. So we're pleased with how it's turned out.
And you've got a particular interest, Emma, in as much as you're actually part of the Peel Lifeboat crew.
Yes, I am. I'm a shore crew, and also I drive the launch and recovery vehicle, and also I'm a head launcher here in Peel. And so, yeah, it does have a special connection for me, this exhibition. So it's really great because it's the 200th anniversary this year, obviously. And so it's, yeah, it's great to kind of have the lifeboats and the lifeboat crew kind of recognised in this way.
And a head launcher, what does a head launcher do?
So we're working on the shore with the shore crew, so directing the driver of the launch vehicle and also making sure that all the shore crew are, you know what they're doing. So it's kind of directing everyone on the ground, on the shore, during launch and recovery procedures.
Okay, and one of the other exhibits which has challenged you, I'm guessing, is the rather magnificent light that's just around the corner from where we're standing.
Yeah, they have a popular Chicken Rock light. Well, not popular with me, but yeah.
And why is it not popular with you?
Because it weighs 225 kilograms. What did you say it was in old money?
I think we worked it out about 4.5 hundredweight.
4.5 hundredweight. Yeah, it's a beautiful object, isn't it? It's really lovely. And it is from the Chicken Rock, and we've got photographs of it. There's a photograph here reproduced in the exhibition of it actually working on the Chicken Rock.
And difficult because it's a relatively confined space that you're trying to place it.
Well, yeah, ideally. It's very top-heavy, as visitors to the exhibition will no doubt surmise, because it's all the glass and brass bits are at the top of it, obviously, and it's very, very heavy. And so it's extremely hazardous to move, and getting it through ordinary doorways is very unpleasant. But, you know, we've done it, so there it is. It's a beautiful thing, so it's worth coming to the exhibition just to see that, really.
And presumably because it's glass, it doesn't require a lot of work from your conservation team.
No, that side of it's quite relaxing. It's just moving it from one place to another, really.
And finally, I caught up with a couple more guests connected with the RNLI.
I'm David Welton, Heritage Manager from RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institution.
So you're over on the Isle of Man to see the opening of this exhibition. Obviously, it's a really big deal for us in the Isle of Man. How important is it for the UK organisation?
Yeah, it's great to be here, actually, on the Isle of Man. The last time I was here, in 2019, we were kicking off the plans for our 200th anniversary. So it's a really big deal. The Isle of Man's always been important to all of us in the RNLI family. Yeah, and it's great to be here and see this exhibition open.
And you've had a sort of a preview of the exhibition. What for you were the standout bits?
Well, there are some RNLI objects in there, of course, but for me, I've seen them before, and it's great to get them out, of course. That's what we want. We want our RNLI treasures out being enjoyed by the general public. So love to see them everywhere. But equally, I like the wildlife. I love the hedgehog stories, stuff like that. You know, it's a real thing that would appeal to a wide audience. So,
And what is quite shocking, really, I suppose, and this is from someone who's spent all their life in the Isle of Man, to realise just how many wrecks there are around the island. And yet, you know, with the age that we live in now, the shipwrecks are thankfully, less and less frequent. But, you know, going back to the times when William Hillary was moved to start this fantastic institution, this was a real significant thing that affected most people's lives.
Yeah, it was, and it does, and it continues to. And as the RNLI, we're so proud of our volunteer crews who put their own lives at risk to save others. And that hasn't changed over the years, you know. We're a volunteer organisation. We do the rescue and we promote water safety. So, yeah.
And as far as the UK is concerned, are there lots of events planned across the UK?
Yeah, there are. We've got a packed programme throughout the year. A couple of highlights for you. We've got the Lifeboat Festival in May in Poole. So that's a full open weekend if anybody's listening and will be local in Poole. You'd be very welcome there. And we've got a programme of partner exhibitions like this. Manx Heritage being the first. So this is wonderful to get this open in Feb. We've got Women of the RNLI exhibition opening at Greenwich next week. And we've got a high-end exhibition at Chatham end of March. And others all across the UK and Ireland. So yeah, busy year ahead.
And finally, Alan Corlett.
I'm the chair of the RNLI 200th panel for the Isle of Man.
So you must be delighted with what we've seen in the exhibition today.
Oh, absolutely, Phil. It's difficult to put it into words, really, how excited we are about what Manx National Heritage have helped us do, not just this evening, but, of course, but throughout this year.
And, having looked around the exhibition, what were the bits that you particularly liked about it?
Well, I'm somewhat biased in all of this. Having been a volunteer in Peel for over 40 years now, we have the figurehead of St George there, details of the rescue. We have the medals that were awarded to Charlie Kane, the Cox, and, of course, my great-grandfather, James Hughes, too. But I think the standout item in the exhibition has to be Sir William Hillary's gold medal, which, of course, is in the custody of the RNLI and their heritage department. That very rarely travels outside of Poole. You can probably only count on one hand the number of times it's been released to any other organisation. So we're very privileged, I think, here on the Isle of Man to have that.
And you mentioned about your volunteering. I mean, you must have had some quite, well, frightening experiences as well as some wonderful experiences as a volunteer.
Well, yes, but my volunteering, most of my frightening experiences have been to do with paperwork and dealing with bureaucracy, Phil. I started to volunteer in 1981 following the Penlee disaster in the south of England, and unfortunately my eyesight wasn't good to be a crew member, so I ended up joining the committee and then just entered the administrative side of the business. So I've been the operations manager in Peel since 1985, and I was a deputy before that, and goodness knows as well. So I've just been keeping a seat warm for 40 years. I'm not brave enough to do what our crews do. Fortunately, I'm delighted to say I've got two sons who are crew, one a cox and now one a mechanic, and I'm very proud of them.
So in terms then of keeping the organisation afloat, that's quite apologies for the pun there, but in terms of your role as effectively administrator for the organisation, that must be a challenge.
It's a constant challenge, yes. Not something which came easily to me, I've lasted okay, I think. But yes, it is a constant challenge dealing with ever increasing administration, ever increasing bureaucracy, health and safety, many, many, many regulations now. No longer do we have the days where fishermen could be pulled off the quayside to go and man a lifeboat. You know, now our volunteer crews, many of whom, of course, aren't natural seamen, you know, have to endure or have to go through an awful lot of training, and they are highly skilled volunteers now. You know, it astonishes me every day the commitment that these people are prepared to put in.
And that is, I suppose, quite surprising, really, isn't it, that health and safety is even impacting on an organisation that's role is wholly about safety.
Oh, absolutely right. I mean, in the UK now, I mean, litigation is rife in any sphere of life you can think of. So the day will come where some bright lawyer somewhere, I dare say, will pick up on an RNLI and a rescue and say, well, why did that particular person drown? You know, was your coxswain trained? How skilled were your crew? And of course, although you can say, yes, they are skilled and yes, they're trained, the lawyer would then ask, well, how can you prove that? So, of course, you have to justify then everything that's done and set standards for it and be able to prove that these standards have been adhered to. So it's an enormous burden.
Do you think William Hillary, if he came back 200 years after establishing the organisation, would recognise what it has become?
I think the individual volunteers involved he would recognise, certainly, but he wouldn't recognise all the periphery organisation that goes around it. No, he wouldn't recognise that at all. Gone are the days where you can just jump on a boat and go and do what you think is the right thing. We'd all love to do that, but sadly those days are long gone.
I normally ask you what you think, pose some questions about on the one hand and yet on the other, but the question surely is superfluous when considering the huge role Sir William Hillary played in saving lives around our shores. The story of the RNLI is undoubtedly a source of great pride for the Manx Nation. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gorn, Goran Maios and Geisteachrom. Thanks for listening.